All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled. I believe this is episode 197. We're coming back at you after a few weeks off. Deborah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It is 197. I've been trying to keep track now.
We recorded a show last week, and it was not very good. It was subpar, and I decided against putting it out. It was not the guest's fault. We had John Jeffries on. He's awesome. And I got to do a better job of getting prepped for shows and doing better. And we had a bunch of technical issues.
Yeah, there were technical issues.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Emily signed out of my Zoom account. And then when I did the new meeting, I wasn't on the premium one. So it went off after 45 minutes. But so it's pretty hot down there, huh?
Yeah, 90 degrees right now.
It's like 75 and sunny, chemtrail in the sky here. It's so pretty out and everything's green again, man. It's like springtime. But
you sent a photo of, or Emily sent it, of her laying on the grass with the big dogs and Tweety.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, when did the grass get so green?
Yeah.
Because I was just there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's super muggy outside because it's wet. It's like moist everywhere, you know. But everything's going good on the farm. We got 3 new sheep, and then also last week, I went out to feed the chickens, and there was 8 chicks in the bushes. So the chickens had laid a secret stash of eggs in the blackberry bushes, and hatched them on their own. So I didn't even have to do anything. I didn't even know. My egg production was low. I was like, where are all these eggs at? And then I found a giant, they call it a clutch of eggs. I found a big clutch of eggs in the blackberry bushes, and they all hatched. 8 of them. One of them was like dead, like face down in the dirt, but barely breathing. And we brought him in, and doing great now.
Oh my God.
We fixed her. I think it's a girl. I don't know. You can't tell yet. But yeah, we fixed her, and she's doing great. We thought we nursed her back, and she was like getting a little better, but like still not doing the greatest. So we thought we were going to have to put her down after like a day or two. And I was just like, let's just give it another day. And she's like perfect now. So,
wow.
Yeah. So pretty cool. And stuff like that happens. So,
yeah. Were they all from one hen? I don't know.
They're all different eggs, so I don't know what's going on. They all look different, and then there's one broody hen who sits on them, so it's a whole weird deal. Everybody was like, but we lost 2 chickens the day before I found those. There was one that like was dead out there that I hadn't seen for a minute, and then I found her, and then there was another one who was like paralyzed in the legs. And I think that's a sign of Merrick's disease, which is like a pretty common disease to infect flocks. It's kind of a bummer, but I think like everybody, most chickens have it. They can vaccinate for them, but it's like one of those things where it like doesn't really do anything. Uh-huh. Like it'll maybe make the symptoms less. So it sounds a little familiar. But doesn't it prevent them from getting it? And it can if your neighbor 5 miles away has a flock with Merrick's disease in it, it can get your stuff. So
airborne.
Yeah,
you said it usually happens when the temperature changes.
That's how worms happen in the sheep.
Oh,
so yeah, we got all the sheep dewormed and trimmed all their hooves and everything like that, which was hard work, you know. They don't want to have it done. And then I had to go out there, and Leonard is my big ram who hates me.
Who hates everybody.
I had to go fight him and trim his hoof. So
were you able to do it by yourself?
Yeah. They're actually like, once I get him on the ground, he's more calm than the girls are.
How do you get him on the ground? He must weigh a couple hundred.
Yeah, it's probably 250. There's this way you like pull their head back. So they're like looking over their back, and then you can just like, it's hard, it's not easy, but then you can like push their their butt down and they just like kind of go down. And once they go down, they kind of give up. But a lot of the girls were pretty, you know, they moved around a lot.
They wanted to let those nails grow.
Yeah. They're, yeah. So it was good. They're all good. Like, so a lot of people can, in different parts of the country, get away with only having to trim their hooves, like once a year. But here, since it's so wet all year long, like, you got to take better care of their hooves and warm them twice and stuff like that. So, but yeah, farm's going great. And yeah, happy to be back. Some wild stuff going on in the news as of late, but we don't really have too much time to get into it. Your girl, Dianne Feinstein, finally kicked the bucket. It's time. But and the good news is Gavin Newsom has vowed to replace her with a black woman. So we've got that going on. I'd like to see a trans, transracial and transsexual black woman, but who knows?
Yeah. Just wait. It'll happen.
Yeah. We also had the Canadians with a Nazi and giving a Nazi a standing ovation in Parliament. The best thing about that is if you came up to me and were like, hey, this guy, I want you to meet this old war soldier. He fought the Soviets. He's Ukrainian. And he fought the Soviets in World War II. I'd be like, so he's fought with the Nazis, right? Because that's what that means.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's either the Canadians knew and didn't care, or they're so stupid that they don't know basic World War II history that you should know if you're in politics. So that, knowing that, that should kind of be like, well, maybe these people don't even know what's going on geopolitically in the world anywhere. I mean, that's why there's such a huge Nazi problem in Ukraine, Deborah. It's left over from World War II because they fought on the side of the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Soviets, which I'm not faulting them for doing. The Soviets were horrific.
Yeah,
after we let the Soviets beat the Nazis, General Patton wanted to keep going east and get the commies, which we should have done, but we didn't. Because guess why? There's a certain group of people that rule the world that like communism. So, sure, we'll get into that a little bit today with our guests, but let's see if they're ready. All right, guys, we're back and we are here with our guests this week. We're super excited. From the History Homos podcast, we've got William from England. And,
greetings, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for being here, man. And then and Scott. And I've got a couple
stats.
Thank
you for having us.
Yeah, I've got a couple stats on you guys. So, William, you are from the UK?
Yes, for my sins. From Yorkshire. Okay.
And Scott, you says here you are an ex-libertarian, a current internet racist, and an Ashkenazi Jew.
No, well, no, my dad is, but dad is, but I am a just a guy.
Okay, yes, Deborah is a full member of the tribe. So.
I am a member of the tribe. Well, I was raised a member of the tribe.
Yeah, but
well, then, so you know that my dad being that, it wouldn't necessarily make me one. Then I assume
correct. Yeah,
but we still need to do maybe an early life check. So
yes, well, it's a physiognomy check. I know my camera's on the fritz right now, but physiognomy check is, you know, it's there.
It checks out.
Yeah, it checks out.
Okay, just want to make sure. Yeah, I've been getting into your guys' back catalog over the last like week and a half since we booked this, and it's really good. I actually have a degree from a 4-year university in history, so it's really awesome to be able to get in to hear you guys get into all these different topics. And I love parapolitics, and it's really nice because it kind of seems like the parapolitical podcast world, the people doing like actual good research is reserved to like weird commie Muslims and things like that. So
there are some internet racists who do it as well.
I was excited to hear you guys, and but yeah, some of the stuff that I like, I really liked, I liked your punk rock stuff, and
that was fun to research.
The takedowns, those two takedowns that you've done of Gene Epstein, man. I still tune into Dave Smith everyone. Oh, you're back. I tune into Dave so Smith happy. Every so once happy. In a while, but man, what a disgusting little troll that guy. Like, you really pointed out that guy is. I hope in part three, there's actual, I don't know if you guys are probably way ahead of me on this. There, in one of his appearances on Part of the Problem in the last 2 years, he defends Drag Time Story Hour.
Yeah.
Wow, I haven't even heard of this. Oh, yeah. Thank you for, you're writing my future show notes. It increases,
hey, come on, man. It increases GDP.
Yeah. Line go up.
I don't know which one it is, but it's like in one of the more recent ones in the last 10 minutes of the show. So I'll try to find it and help you for the next that one that you do.
Very, very funny. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Thank you for the kind words.
Honestly, yes, I appreciate it.
We didn't really, when we started the show, which is like over 3 years ago now, I think we never really envisioned it. I can't say that word. We never really
envisaged.
Yeah, we never really thought it would go the way it's gone. I don't think we knew what was going to happen.
Yeah,
I just rephrased it. But what happened was I wasn't into this. I wasn't really, I mean, I haven't really changed like politically ever, but I've researched a different historical topic every week. And one of our gimmicks is that we don't know anything about anything we haven't done a show about.
Yes. I mean, that's not a gimmick. That's just a reality.
Yeah, I know, but it turned out to be a gimmick.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I wasn't into conspiracy type stuff at all. But if you genuinely research a different historical topic every 2 weeks, you'll be full on conspiracy.
Yeah, tinfoil guy.
Tinfoil guy. Right?
Within about 6 months, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I'm
I was already there, but I didn't realize how far I would go with it once we started looking into things every week, basically.
Yeah, because we just did it. We started doing it for something to do, really, didn't we? For fun.
Yeah, we're both kind of at like pretty low points in our lives, I think, when we started the show. Actually, I was like really bad alcoholic, and through the first few, the show gave me a reason to live, basically, and I basically cleaned up my act, and now I have over 2 years sober. So
that's awesome.
Thank
man.
You.
I'm sober as well. So.
Yeah,
can be done.
So am I. I'm 24 hours sober.
Me too. High five.
What do you guys? What? I don't get a chance. I live on a farm, so I got a lot of work to do.
Based?
What? Yeah. Oh, and when you mentioned on Pete's show that how could you be depressed with 90 acres when you were talking about Oliver Anthony? I live on 15 acres, man. It is. It's pretty easy to get depressed, man. It's rough out here too.
Yeah, but, fair
enough.
What
doing there? Like, if you're actually farming it, I mean, farmers kill themselves left and right, don't they? It's
yeah, it's usually around here it's usually meth overdose, but you know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So he would have wanted to go. He died doing what he loved.
Yeah.
Meth.
I don't get to do as much research as I want. I try to get some reading done every night, but the way that you guys do the show is like a new topic every week. How do you, what are some of the tricks you use to research?
Good question. That's a really good question, actually.
We have things to say about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say that we just know what we're going to talk about well in advance, and we like just double up. I legitimately will read two books concurrently of things that we're going to talk about in the future. And it really is just like a lot of, we both do put a lot of time into the show. Like, and I hope people understand that, because it does kind of come off as like we're just having fun and laughing a bunch. I mean, sometimes it is just that, of course, too. Yeah. but also we do always prepare like a lot for every episode. I will say that.
Yeah.
What were you just going to say though, William?
Yeah. I mean, there's like some sort of, I'm a truck driver, so I'm kind of, you know, I can't hold a book very much.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
I have perfected this. I read loads of books now. I read loads of books. You can get almost anything, a free copy of it on PDF, and then have the text-to-speech things on Android now are so good that it's better than a lot of audiobooks. Sometimes I'll have the audiobook on Audible, and I'll see if I can get I don't like the narrator, the guy who's reading it. I'll just read the book. Text of it.
I was listening to these Audible books from Audible, the 1 Second After series. Mm. And it's they have Bronson Pinchot, Balky Bartokomis from Perfect Strangers. You remember that guy from the 80s?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the like TV a show. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's
the most like a annoying person.
Yeah, he's like a big.
Oh wait, he's now he's he does audiobook reader.
Audiobooks, oh, it's terrible, man.
I'm guessing his normal quote normal voice,
yeah,
not his Balky voice.
No, he doesn't do it in the Balky voice, but he does do like voice. He does like it's a book series that takes place in like the Appalachian Mountains, so he does like female like Southern accents and stuff like that. But
that's great. It'd I mean, that great. Sucks. Honestly, that really sucks.
you know who should be an audiobook guy on Audible? Bobcat Goldthwait.
Doing that. No.
That yeah, like rule. Police Academy 2 yeah. era Bobcat Goldthwait. That would be.
yeah, reading the Franklin scandal.
Oh my God.
Just calling back to what Scott was saying about reading two books at a time and sort of getting back onto the topic of what we're supposed to be talking about here. I just randomly was reading or listening to both the Franklin scandal and Program to Kill at the same time. And there's so much overlap that it almost exploded my brain.
Really?
Yeah, that's one of the questions I have written down in my notes is like, where's the intersection? But I guess we'll get to that.
Well, yeah, I mean it's there, all right.
Yeah.
The thing is, both those guys, and I think especially Dave McGowan, Dave McGowan's more of a. I mean, he's got a. He's studied this subject, and he's got a unified view of what's going on, and he's right. Whereas I think Mr. Bryant, the journalism in the Franklin Scandal book is amazing, but it's really just about that. It's not about everything.
Whereas, it's presenting a journalistic case, whereas the Dave McGowan one is like, I mean, it is the title of the book is The Politics of Serial Murder, and it is like almost a semi-political case for what his overarching theory is.
At the start of the Franklin scandal, I never got through that whole book. I had to like set it down because it was a rough read, and then I just picked it back up. I know a lot about the case. But at the start of that book, if I remember, Nick Bryant pretty much talks about how much disdain he had for like conspiracy theorists.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, but I mean, he's come around now. He's like totally believes in all sorts of stuff now. Yeah. If you listen to his podcast. So
I do listen to his podcast. Yeah.
The thing with him
is, you don't really know what Nick Bryant's personal opinions are from listening to his podcast. Cause he's actually a first class journalist, and so when he's interviewing people, yeah, he's a print journalist guy. So his podcast. So when he's interviewing somebody on his podcast, he'll just act like he agrees with all their stuff. He never like argues with people.
Did you hear when he had Peter Lavenda on? He did push back on him a little bit, but I know what you're saying. He pushed back because Peter Lavenda was carrying a bunch of water for Michael Aquino.
Right. Okay.
Oh, really? I also heard that he like sort of carried water for the Clintons a little bit too.
Yeah, and then you know that that group of like the gay Catholic priests.
Oh yeah, yes, I am. Yeah, the like, one that just got busted for jacking off in public.
Yeah, he like had one of those people on the show and like talked about how great it was, but
yeah,
you know,
oof.
A lot of those old like guys from that era, like Douglas Valentine, all those guys are like, they got hit with TDS pretty badly. Douglas Valentine was on the most recent episode of Program to Chill, and he's like talking about his memoirs that he just wrote about, that's supposed to be about the Phoenix program and this big trip to Vietnam that he took was sponsored by the BBC. And he just can't stop talking about Donald Trump. It's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy. I last week, not to get too far off topic, but last week we were talking about like this Mormon breakoff group, and I was watching that episode, so you know what I'm talking about. I was listening to a bunch of Mormon podcasts, and it's like, why is Trump coming up in the fucking Mormon podcast? Like, you guys are supposed to be talking about Mormonism. Is Trump Mormon? I didn't think so. Like,
well,
it's weird. It's very weird.
Oh, yeah, that book, which I've got here in front of me, actually, The King of Confidence, which we kind of based that episode on, was that's a really, really well-written book. But then you get to the end of it, and the story of it is the guy was commissioned to write it by the publishers. The publishers said, "Oh, I want someone to write this book, you do it." And it was part of the brief that it had to be a warning about Trump. But he managed to keep it down to just one. Basically, the punchline, the last paragraph of the book is, yeah, watch out, kids.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's like this guy. It's I'm like, dude, you just ruined your book.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man.
I let it go.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I recommend it.
So today we're going to get into Franklin. We're going to get into Program to Kill. We're going to get into the overlap of it. I don't remember when I learned about the Franklin scandal, but it feels like it's something that I've always known about. I think I might have seen something on A&E or Discovery back in the day when I was younger, around the time when Conspiracy of Silence, is that the one that never came out, was supposed to come out?
Yes, the Yorkshire TV did it.
Yeah.
Bizarrely, me being from Yorkshire,
I'd never
heard of it apart from hearing other people talk about it as if I did know what they were talking about.
Yeah. And so it was like Deborah and I got into it on the fourth, we're on episode 197, like in our third, over 3 years of doing this. And it was our fourth episode we talked about it. And then we've gotten into Program to Kill a lot lately. Deborah doesn't know a lot about a lot of stuff, but she knows a lot about serial killers. So it's the one thing that will keep her keep her attention. And we got to slow things. She's up to date on boosters, so we got to slow stuff a little bit down for her. But other than that, let's get into it, guys.
Well, before we start, I do want to say, when William told me that we're going to be appearing on Deborah Gets Red Pilled, I was like, what is that, like a, I'm, and forgive me if someone's already done this bit, but what is that, like an unaired episode of Everybody Loves Raymond?
Yeah.
And he's like, Deborah, look at these FBI crime statistics.
Pretty much it. Yeah.
But okay, sorry, I had to get that little fucking pre-written joke out of the way. I guess the first time I heard about the Franklin scandal was the movie Who Took Johnny, which came out in 2008, and I saw a couple years later online. I was a 4chan guy going way back, so you know, you get to see weird, you know, esoteric stuff when you go on 4chan.
It was on Amazon for free for a long time.
Oh, that's where I saw it, I think. I must have torrented it, now that I'm thinking about it. Whatever, it doesn't matter. But the point is that I saw it and then I was like, holy shit. And by the way, Nick Bryant appears in that movie. I recently rewatched it, actually. But it's a good primer too, because it talks about the Johnny Gosch story, which is like intimately tied up with the Franklin thing, because of Paul Bonacci. And it sort of like very lightly invokes MKUltra and stuff. And then again, I was already into conspiracies, and I was at that time, I was like a 9/11 truther, et cetera, in 2010 or something. So I just, you know, dove right in at that point, learned about MKUltra and all this other stuff. And I think it was, is it 2012 that the Franklin scandal book came out?
I'm not sure. You've got it right there.
You've got it in front of you.
Oh, wow. It is. Hang on.
Inside
anyway,
different
I,
cover
was,
somewhere.
Yeah, he started.
Let's say it was.
Yeah, sure. It was 2012. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was actually. Oh my god. 2009 actually. Wow. So perfect. Yeah. And Nick Bryant became like a guy on conspiracy. He would go on to conspiracy things.
Yeah, the first I ever heard him was when he went on War Mode.
Oh yeah.
That was kind of recently though. Day.
Yeah, a few years ago. Yeah, but like I say, I'm new to all this stuff. Oh, I'm the Deborah. Point, yeah. I'm our version of Deborah. I'm the Deborah in the room.
What is WALMO?
War Mode.
War Mode.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, War Mode. It's another internet racist podcast.
Probably internet, internet Navy SEAL appreciation podcast.
Yeah.
That was the other thing. Epstein happened. And by the way, I was already podcasting at this point. I was on my old movie review podcast, but I was into conspiracy. So every week I would bring conspiracy stuff. We reviewed Who Took Johnny on the show as during our documentary month on the show. And then Epstein happened, and that like really activated me.
the second Epstein,
when
like
he got
2018,
when he was arrested and killed himself. That happened. And then also in the wake of that, the Finders papers dropped.
Right.
And that was also a big one for me. I initially poured through them myself back in 2012 or whatever year, whatever. I don't know. It must have been later than that. 2017 or oh, 20, it was 2019. Sorry. And I poured through them then. And, you know, it does to you when you read that for the first time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, fast forward, here we are. Basically, we started the podcast in 2020.
Yeah. Interesting. What was the, was Program to Kill the first Dave McGowan stuff that you got into?
No, I actually, for the show, I had read, Weird Scenes in the Canyon. Yeah.
Yeah, that book ruined. That made Deborah really sad to read that one. That's like all her old
depressed
heroes.
That was my era.
Yeah, I imagine.
All out of the water. Yeah, very sad.
I will say this about that book is, I really like Program to Kill. And like again, no offense to Dave McGowan, and you know he's dead, so he doesn't really care, but. I feel like his tone in that book was kind of condescending.
In Program to Kill or
Weird Scenes in the Canyon.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of his writing style. His books are kind of a slog to get through for me. Wagging the Moondoggie, have you read that one?
I have not read that one, no.
It's his moon landing book.
Oh, I'm going to have to read that.
If you go to his website's still up, Center for an Informed America, CIA.com. Uh-huh. So if you go there, there's a free audio version of it. It's pretty good.
Nice. I'm gonna have to listen to that. That rules.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like the second chapter, it's just him like listing everything that needed to go on the like 11-foot circle of the spaceship that they would have had to take with them.
Right.
It's just like it doesn't make, you know, it's
yeah, air and you know, water, yeah, and all
like all these batteries and air conditioners and like all this crazy stuff. So but yeah, so when you got into Program to Kill, did you read Program to Kill, or you did Nick Bryant before Program to Kill?
No, I'm actually reading the books. Well, I just recently read both for the physically read the both. Optically, yes, I actually physically read both. I didn't, but you know, I had watched interviews and stuff prior to that. But no, I actually did the work only in the last 6 months.
Yeah,
yeah. I read them both at the same time, which was a mistake. But yeah. I actually reread Program to Kill to come on this show. That's how much work we do.
Yeah,
damn. It took me a couple months to get through it. I'm a slow reader, but
yeah.
Yeah, how do you guys want to get into it? You just want to hit some of the main people in Program to Kill and see where the overlap happens or what?
I think we should start by giving the framework,
okay.
Basically. which is the theory presented in Program to Kill, is that the American serial killer phenomenon is something of a canard utilized to cover for various different facets of CIA organized and covered for organized crime syndicates
and satanic
and satanic cults. Worship. Yeah. And there's just a big Venn diagram between those two things.
Yeah. But I think the actual core of it is the core of his argument is the reason they're doing that is it's to make people clamor for more surveillance, more security, more police, more prisons. Uh-huh. I mean, especially more prisons. It goes into how what the goings on in Texas in particular that made, because they were liberalizing their prison system, and so they had to have some serial killers because people wouldn't vote to build new, wouldn't vote the money for new prisons. So they said, well, you're gonna have to have a few serial killers, and we'll let some serial killers out of prison.
And yeah, then, like Henry Lee Lucas.
Yeah, right. That kind of thing, yeah. So that's partly his reason why they're doing it. But I mean, I came out of reading Program to Kill the first time just thinking, because, you know, like, you guys are familiar with, like, rightoid, we call, you know, that sort of people who say, you know, they give up bread and every single, you know, into Tartaria, mud floods and all that kind of stuff, which I love all that stuff, but you know, yeah, what I mean.
I got yeah. Tartaria bad.
Yeah. I love that.
I came out of it. I still can't explain the world's fairs, but I got out all
it's,
the
it's curious
thing.
I agree with you, by the way, that it's a curious thing that happened with that whole world fair thing. But I also, by the way, just to quickly comment on the Tartaria thing, I just feel like that, like, robs us of, like, our pretty cool history that we have. Yeah. Like, in the, like, the West has a pretty, I think, pretty cool and, like, archetypal history that, like, sets us up for, like, greatness in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And just be like, that's fake. It was actually, like, a, you know, cyberpunk or steampunk fucking empire that ruled the whole planet.
Yeah, it seems kind of like it was a psyop to, like, take away all the accomplishments of Western civilization.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of my take on it too. But anyway, I digress. William, you were saying?
Yeah, so what I came away from it on my first reading was, and like I say, it's kind of a rightoid meme that it's actually a battle of demonic forces versus you know, forces angelic. Of good. Yeah. And after reading Program to Kill for the first time, I was like, oh yeah, the rightoids are absolutely right about that. That is what it is, because I think, you know, there is. I think McGowan's right. They are trying to terrorize people into wanting to be policed harder. I mean, that's happening. There's a guy called, there's a rightoid sort of grifter called Peter Sweden who does these. He got big during COVID and all that, and he likes to complain about immigration into Sweden, which is, you know, all well and good, but it's really clickbaity to. Anyway, I follow him on his Telegram, and he's like, oh, finally, they've mobilized the army onto the streets of Stockholm, and we're now under martial law. And I'm like, yep, that's why they brought the immigrants in.
Yeah.
To make you want that. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, the Q people were pushing for martial law.
Yeah. Yeah. There, they were unironically like, please, God, let there be a coup d'etat. Yeah. Against the government by the military, because that always works out great.
Yeah.
Just 100% of the time, it just rocks.
Yeah. But yeah, McGowan's right about that. But I think he also thought it was demonic as well. You know,
it's got to be. Yeah. I mean, why would they do the Satan stuff?
Yeah.
Just for fun? They got to believe on it on some level.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they do.
Yeah. I know they do.
Because, and it is like the, it's of all these sort of deists who aren't Christians, or I mean, I've got nothing against Muslims or, you know, whatever, but these guys who, yeah, there is a God, but it's they don't like to actually identify which one it is. Yeah, well, it's just because it's Satan. You know. So the Freemasons and your global Cecil Rhodes type globalists and all they're in the pay of Satan.
Or the demiurge, at least. Doesn't have to have a name.
I started going to church. I'm in England, so like the only options I've got anywhere near me are Church of England, which is the state thing. Anyways, we were going to church every week, and then a few things happened where I realized, no, this has been taken over by, I didn't put it in those terms at the time, but this has been taken over by demonic forces, which if you look into the history of it, if you listen to our Henry VIII episode,
very early on in the show, by the way,
that is literally what the Church of England was for from the beginning. It's not that it's gone bad. It's always been bad.
It was about doing what thou wilt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did they actually say that?
No, but I mean, it was about him, Henry VIII, like wanting to coom really bad.
Yeah, he wanted, his wife kept having girls, right?
No, yeah. I think he just like got sick of them. He was just he was done with one. And then he was like, oh, I met a new one. Oh, God, I got to.
The Catholic Church wouldn't allow him to divorce?
But also, he'd already done it twice and they were like, no more.
Yeah, I'm Eastern Orthodox and like, yeah, we've got the three strikes and you're out. After two, you probably shouldn't do it anymore.
Honestly.
So we've got this thing with the, I've been thinking about this Henry VIII Church of England thing a lot lately, just in my quiet moments.
Well, and we have been thinking about satanic child stealing.
You can see it happening really, really overtly with the current Pope. What happened way back with the Church of England is they're trying to take... So think of it as the foundation of the Church of England as being akin to what's happening in the Roman Catholic Church now. It's the absolute loyalists who are just, we're part of this church, come what may. Well, okay, well, they're going to become like Satan worship, download Satan worship. They don't realize they are, but that's what they're doing because they, you know, drag time story hour, you know, all this bad stuff that the Pope now thinks is cool. But on the other, and with everybody else, it's discredited the church, and the church is I think the state itself is an evil entity, and the church is one of those organs which challenges the primacy of the state, and indeed pre-Henry VIII it was above the state, and it had its own corruption problems because of that, but you know, it commands loyalty over the state. And so the state doesn't like it. So if they can hijack they'll discredit it with the hardliners, so they're thereby breaking their loyalty to it. And
the ones who stay, they're just going along with whatever the government wanted in the first place. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's pretty fiendish. I mean, it's literally fiendish.
It's literally demonic. They're subverting the church.
Yeah.
So that it is identical to the government, which is commanded by capital, basically.
Yeah. In the pursuit of usury and line go up.
Yeah. Gotta get that line going up. But
where does Henry Lee Lucas come in?
Henry Lee Lucas. Well, he was the eighth Henry Lee Lucas. And but no, okay, so what we were saying before though is like, so okay, let's just do like a quick CIA history lesson. That's a good way to start this. So the CIA, after World War II, they were able to do a bunch of fun stuff like destabilizing various South American countries and stuff at the behest of various corporations. Everybody made a lot of money, but the problem is there's a lot of overhead for this. In order to keep this money train moving, you got to sell some drugs. And basically they facilitated what we know as the American drug problem, essentially. Like, you know, it's an epidemic that has killed countless of people my age, good friends of mine. I had to just bury, essentially, just the lost time, because their CIA gay ops need to be funded. Yeah. And they need to be funded with money that didn't come from the American taxpayer. Now, in order to facilitate this, this takes a lot of moving parts, and a lot of people have to get killed to stay quiet about it. And in order to do that, this strategy of creating this boogeyman of serial killers as a cover story for a bunch of otherwise unexplainable deaths and killings is deployed in a patsy of someone who is invariably MK-Ultra'd and certainly sexually traumatized and or just mentally enfeebled. Yeah. And it's easy for them to be tried in the court of public opinion. And it ties a nice neat bow on, you know, and by the way, also it's worth mentioning that these people that they throw in jail, they're all guilty of murder. They're all sick people who commit murders and rapes and stuff for fun and pleasure, but they go down for more things than they did in order to make cover for various, you know, narco operatives, hitmen, child porn creators.
A great many of them like video and photograph what they're up to, but that never sees the light of day in the courthouse because they don't want you seeing who else is in the photographs.
Right.
Yeah. You know, this is a strong suspicion that Dave McGowan had was
right.
Yeah. They say they've got all these photographs and videotapes.
Why didn't
they show him in court? That would have made him look bad.
His first chapter in Program to Kill is the, what he calls the pedophocracy, and he gets into the Belgian Mark Dutroux case.
Oh, and dude, yeah. I remember that one.
You remember when that was happening, William?
Yeah, that was big news over here in Disney.
Yeah,
didn't
make it over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never heard about him until I read the book.
Yeah, and then I listened, there's a podcast called Le Monstre, all about that. It's not very good, but it's like a 12-parter. And it's crazy, like the Belgian version of the FBI was so in on it, and they were like in this house with like a locksmith like 3 feet away from the dungeon behind a fake wall, like hearing these kids screaming, and like the locksmith's like, hey, we gotta like open this one, and they're like, nah, those noises are coming from kids playing outside, and like just like leaving.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, that's pretty dark. But the thing with that was, you know, the people of there was a general strike in Belgium.
Yeah, didn't 200,000 people or something march on the Capitol building or something?
And so, but even then, it just shows you just nothing actually happened. They just throw a couple of guys to the wolves.
Yeah.
But it still carries on. It's still, they never got to the bottom.
And Mark Dutroux, wasn't he like barely literate and he had no reason to have any money, by the way?
Right.
Yeah, and he had
the guy to throw to them to be like, he did
several
it.
Several houses.
Yeah, he was.
Jeffrey Epstein, same thing.
Yeah, he was out. Mark Dutroux was out of prison for rape or something and like on the dole, and he was able to buy like 9 houses or something like that. They were nice houses, but still, I mean.
Well, they're in Belgium as well.
Yeah. I don't understand the reference.
It's not a very attractive.
Really?
Yeah, it's also France, basically.
Yeah. So it's like less good France.
In England, France is just like a punchline.
Okay.
Yeah, no, France is all right. Speaking of France, I'll probably save this for our show. But I'm just going to say,
I can only imagine what this is going to be.
Rochefort cheese rules.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's how you know I'm not fully Jewish, by the way. I love cheese.
Oh, man.
Well, Deborah's daughter, who would qualify as fully, is a verified cheese addict. So,
right.
I'm sorry to you then, Adam. The aftermath of that.
It doesn't. It's all. So we got the Dutroux case. He gets through all that. He quotes some wild numbers about the amount of money that child pornography was making in like the early 2000s or something.
Right. And that's gotta be a lowball, by the way. Cause I mean, this is like an official government figure. So, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's not that big of a problem.
And it wasn't illegal.
Oh yeah. There was,
it wasn't even illegal. You can still own it.
Porn wasn't illegal on the internet until like 2004 or something. Like child porn wasn't illegal on the internet, or you couldn't have it.
Right.
You couldn't sell it
but if you, it was like grandfathered in. If you had it, you're all good.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I remember that. Like,
oh, come on, man.
That guy Barry. That's that guy Barry choices. Crimmins. That
Barry Crimmins. That's who I was going to bring up. Yeah. And also, I remember that documentary from the 80s. I didn't watch it in the 80s. I was not born yet. But what's it called? That documentary from the 80s, Chicken Hawk.
I don't know that.
Disgusting.
One.
I mainly know about it because Opie and Anthony talked about it and said, "Oh, look at these ghouls."
Yeah. They all looked like Jim Norton.
I mean, yes. Like, yeah. I think that joke was made too, by the way.
Yeah.
I think he was the one who brought the movie up. So it's kind of weird that he knew about it too. Yeah. But now I know about it and it was weird. So again, so this also ties into like, again, it's just like, this is something that I've said before on the show, but like, Program to Kill is a mind breaker. Like I'll never be the same. Yeah. I can't look at the world the same after reading that book. Like now my entire estimation of reality is reshaped. And then it was even more so when we learned like the full extent of Operation Mockingbird. And then, you know, it just sort of all, you know, kaleidoscopes into one really schizophrenic worldview. To the point where, like, lately, sorry to interrupt you, William, but lately I've been, like, walking down the street, and, like, if I see someone, like turn to look at me, I have one part of my brain goes, oh, that's an agent, like, watching you. And then the other one goes, no, that's retarded. Why would you think that?
It's like you're too.
I'm gang stalked. I'm getting gang. I'm like MK altering myself into being a gang stalking victim.
Dude, that's a scary deal, man. Like it's scary that because it's totally real, but there's totally people that aren't being gang stalked that think they are.
Yeah,
but there's people like that totally are, and they're all on drugs, so it's really hard to decipher who's who.
Yeah,
like. You ever read Camellia?
No,
by Robert Guffey. Oh, it's a great story. It's about this guy, and he steals. There's an old Hireside Chats with that guy with the author on it. Mm. But it's this guy. He's like a tweaker in San Diego, and he's at like some. He has like a meth house, and he's partying with all these people. And this guy comes. This guy who just went like AWOL from the Marines comes with like a bunch of laptops, and that he stole from Camp Pendleton, and he like opens one up at the party, and like the DOJ logo like flashes on the screen like as soon as they open it, and the guy's like, oh no, and he like shuts it, and he's like, you got to get out of here real quick. So then like eventually they get raided, and what happens is the guy gets gang stalked and all this crazy stuff happens to him. Like they can make his apartment shrink or get bigger. Oh, and God. They're like, there's like invisible midgets and stuff, and midgets with invisibility cloaks and all this.
Oh,
crazy
so it's a documentary.
Stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's a real story. It's a true story.
Yeah.
But
what's the name of it?
Camellia by Robert Guffey.
I'll check that out. So it reminds me of if you've ever read A Scanner Darkly. Great book, by the way.
Yeah. I've seen the
Speaking
movie.
Speaking of schizophrenic, the book's way better than the movie. I
yeah,
like
the good too, part but... about the movie is no reading.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah, yeah. Well, you could read it as well, like we also sometimes do, by the way. But so anyway, I have a couple other things I wanted to get to. Yeah, so the whole like it really does shape my entire worldview. And like sometimes I think I've said this before, but I feel like, I mean, first of all, everyone needs to read this book, or everyone needs to know this information, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important. It's important that everybody knows this.
Yeah, I tell you what I think about it. after my second reading, what the takeaway is, because I don't really talk about this kind of stuff IRL with people, because number one, I'm a tantamount to being a hermit, and I don't speak to people much at all. But when I do, I don't want to spend my time. You know, if you want me to persuade you that conspiracy stuff is real, you have to listen to the show. I'm not going to do it in real life. But I do get asked about, there's one or two people who know that I do this show, and good friends. And one of them was, there's one guy who sometimes will ask me questions about stuff. And it, you know, it wouldn't be about anything to do with Program to Kill per se. But it dawned on me that all I've got to do next time this guy asks me about anything, and it, you know, is it really credible and all that, is just give him that book and say, read that. Because that, you don't really need to know about any other conspiracies. If you know about that one, then anything's right. possible. And it's very well documented. I mean, I like Dave McGowan's writing style in that book. Anyway, it's the only one I've read. I think it's great. But with this kind of stuff that's really dense and well-researched, how the writing style fits into your brain. Dave McGowan fits my brain just right, whereas some things, Scott really absolutely raves about how well-written they are, and I'm thinking, yeah, it doesn't really... You know, different writers will go into your head differently, won't they?
Yeah. Dave McGowan's writing style to me is, and this is a compliment sandwich. It is an extremely densely and well researched college paper.
Yeah,
I'm with Scott on that one.
Yeah,
yo, I like that.
But I mean,
because I'm not much of an entertainment guy. I just want to know the facts.
He wrote that book. That book came out in 2004.
Yeah.
So he must have been it's not that long ago, but it's a lot harder to research stuff in 2002 than it is right now.
Sure. And not just that, but there's nobody who's more right about everything than him either. And this is a great strength of it. Another reason why it's, like I say, it's a great book to just give to somebody and say, well, just before you ask me any more questions, read that. Because it's also he's a libtard, and it's written for a libtard audience.
Yeah, all those guys at that
makes
time
it even
were.
Better. Yeah. But
because,
that makes
because
it so
Bush was
better.
In office.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I was.
Yeah.
I was 14, but I was.
Yeah. what was I gonna say? If you can get that into somebody's hands, and another good one is for just brand new people or people who don't know anything, is Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Matheson.
Yeah, definitely.
Like,
that one
will do it. Yeah. I read that book and I was like, oh, I already know all this stuff. But like, to some people, they're like, what? Like,
yeah, that was a big eye opener for me.
And that guy's a retard. Like that guy went full. That guy is full on like climate retard.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, total lib. But it doesn't mean what he has to say is wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, he totally ruined a whole bunch of countries, you know.
Yeah.
And he can try to make up for it by talking about global warming, but, you know, someday I'll answer for it.
Yeah.
Well.
Yes, you were going to say.
I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay, I can launch into something.
Yeah.
Like I said before, the way basically... Okay, we also... Ritual abuse. That is a good way to start the many of these operatives / patsies off. It is something that is pretty well documented. A lot, if you go on Wikipedia right now, it says it's fake, of course. It is a pretty well-documented phenomenon. Particularly, I feel like the Finders incident is like a massive smoking gun with it, especially with its direct connection with the McMartin preschool. Specifically, not only is the fact that the McMartin preschool excavation archaeological report found randomly within the Finders documents, also... And pivotal character in both stories, Nathan Greenberg, was the psychologist who was brought. I know. Yeah.
Can you guys hear that when I do that?
I couldn't, but ding.
It's weird. It doesn't work. It doesn't work on here. I gotta. Yeah.
What's it called? He was the psychologist called in for the McMartin preschool case, and he was the one who was basically like, these kids are lying.
And they've got a whole foundation that does
False memory.
So, isn't that Massachusetts too, by the way, if I'm not mistaken? Also, I just found out another MK Ultra thing is in Canton, Massachusetts, which is the home of Bill Burr, by the way, but also it's at the town next to where I grew up. And there's apparently an autistic child torture center there that was like closed recently because of the abuse of autistic children using electroshock therapy that has been going on there since the early 80s.
Dude.
So we got to do an episode on this. Obviously, I just found out about this. A Canton, Massachusetts story. I couldn't believe it. That crossed my desk.
It's crazy. And they also they want everybody totally stressed out as well and on SSRIs and whatever other hideous brain altering drugs that they can think up to make you give your children. And it's like, I'd be happy if they just would take the boot off the neck a little bit. You know, it's like, the way they abuse children.
A little bit of carrot rather than stick, William?
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't think the carrot. Carrot don't work anymore, I don't think.
Yeah.
We're doing it again, by the way, dude. I got off track with Nathan Greenberg. Nathan Greenberg's connection to the Finders is he is the doctor. He flew all the way to Chicago and said, stop examining those children. I have to inspect them. And even though the Florida Department of Health and Human Services doctors who inspected the kids said, no, there's physical evidence of their being sexually abused, Nathan Greenberg shows up and says, no, they aren't, because I'm a psychiatrist and I inspected them, their brains, I guess.
Yeah.
A bunch of them were like incontinent, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were being fed nothing. So there's that.
Yeah.
But specifically,
they
were like
on a heavy vegetarian diet too.
One of the things that really struck me, when the Finders papers were released, I think it was it only last year or was it this
2019,
year?
2019. I told you it was while we were doing old podcast and I talked about it on the show.
No, but I thought it would be more recent than that. But anyway, when those Finders papers came out, and that people, if you look back at people like talking about it on the internet and doing analysis of it, it's like you see these sort of rightoid YouTubers and stuff like that, and you think, wait a minute, they all to a man and woman give the impression that the kids are sort of like, you know, age 10 to 14 or something like that. But then you read the actual documents, people, and the oldest one was what? Four?
No. The oldest one was 8.
Yeah.
They were taking them to
a special school for talented children in Mexico.
But they were coming from Virginia and they were in Tallahassee, Florida. They
got sleepy.
I don't have the best sense of direction, but that's not the right way, right?
They were going by boat.
Yeah,
it's but they're gonna float the van.
I never thought of that. Yeah, they were taking them to like some container ship or something like that. A bunch of the kids could speak Chinese, right?
Yeah,
one could. The oldest girl, Mary, could. Yeah,
and then they had like old school. Internet,
she also
right?
said that like a Chinese billionaire taught me how to speak this Chinese. And it's like, why were you an 8-year-old girl alone with a Chinese billionaire?
Yeah.
Well, you know why, Scott.
I do know why. But I mean, shouldn't they all been like, I refuse to give you back? I mean, they did for a long time, I suppose.
Abbreviate.
Why would your parents allow this?
Well, they were in the cult.
They were part of the cult. That yeah. there were, it was like kind of like they said it was they were kind of like communal like, children. Yeah, like Move in Philadelphia, right?
And it was similar, yeah. Except they were all like
I don't think Move overrepresented was
Jewish, by the way. But they were all like Ivy League educated losers who were all had been unemployed for over 10 years. And they yeah. were basically doing odd jobs for the CIA. And like to the extent where they would like in a moment's notice, they would fly to England to hand over a like literally an envelope that they weren't allowed to look inside
because these were the finders were doing this.
The finders yeah. were doing it. Okay. Yeah.
I just want to defend Move a little bit here. I don't think they were satanic. I think just dumb.
I just meant that they yeah, yeah. really dumb. Yeah. I just meant the similar was like they were living communally. They had a funky diet.
Yeah.
Yeah, the American government probably shouldn't have bombed them, though.
Probably not.
The Philadelphia American government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the Philadelphia PD that did it.
Yeah, well, yeah, they did get bombs from the ATF, I believe.
Okay, cool.
Right. Yeah, they just wired a bomb up and chucked it out of a helicopter.
Crazy. Well, they were probably like, yeah, we're not going to be able to use this bomb if we don't use it today.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Throw it out of the helicopter.
I don't think. Yeah, that's definitely not what the accent of the Move members sounded like.
No. They have their own special accent.
No, that was the cops that said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the cops talking. Yeah. But yeah. So the finders, and then yeah. So that, like I said, the finders was kind of. That's like we caught a program to kill cell basically in action, essentially one of these like little cells of.
Yeah. So what are they doing this to these kids for? Why are they completely ruining these kids' lives? It's so that they can grow up and be good little serial killers and make us want more police.
And yeah, also to do like little odd jobs, like shooting a rival, you know, say a guy gets enough money to buy a kilo of coke and starts becoming a local dealer. Or whatever, and it's now competing with the guy that the CIA is passing his drugs along to. They got to go kill somebody's got to go kill that guy, so that guy can't compete with the you know. Or what? I'm making up a fictional scenario here, obviously, but just imagine what your wherever your wildest imagination.
Oh, let's. I think the more accurate scenario would be: let's say some parent finds out who's been diddling their kid and starts talking about it. Well, that parent has to be killed.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, what the scenario you just described,
Troy
Scott,
Boner's
is,
brother.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it that way because one N is Boner, not Bonner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But are you familiar with the Chicago Ripper crew?
I was going to bring them up. Yes. Yeah. They raped
all these prostitutes and bit their breasts off, but they also shot a local drug dealer also
several I think
or took the fall for it
drive by, didn't they?
Yeah
That's I think and Dave McGowan even says like that's weird if they, you know like if their MO you know usually police work involves a modus operandi, their modus operandi seems to be grabbing women up and raping and beating them, not doing drive-by shootings, so it's just kind of odd. I guess we could just do some greatest hits here. I mean, of course, there's the Titans, of course, Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer, who are both literally stationed at the same German, the same American, military base in Germany.
West Germany. Yeah.
Yeah. To work in the medical unit doing experiments, I'm gonna guess is probably what they were getting done. They were
all the ones that were like slicing up the bodies and stuff like that.
It's one of the real strengths of Dave McGowan's sort of really super dry writing style is that he goes from one subject to the next, and each one he goes, this guy worked in a mortuary. Then he joined the military and he got sent to Germany. Then he worked in a hospital. Then he got admitted to hospital, psych hospital, where
he worked
got
at a butcher shop,
given loads of drugs. Then he got discharged after only 9 months of service on full benefits for life. And every single one is exactly the same. It's the same story.
It has
like
rhythm.
Going through this production line. Yeah.
So I think this was probably the, and you were the one who said this, William, on the last time we talked about it on the show, but it has this rhythm and it's very intentional that he has this exact sort of methodical approach to each subject in the story. So basically he's going, are you getting it yet? They do this every time for every person.
Yeah. And so this actually, another great light bulb moment I had, this explains a meme that dates right back to the 70s or 80s anyway, at least. You know those serial killer glasses, the spectacles?
Yes. Yeah. I
now know why. This meme is, how come all serial killers wear the same
spectacles? Talking about like the Jeffrey Dahmers?
Yeah, yeah, those ones.
I'm getting those next time I go in.
Well, I'll tell you why. I mean, McGowan doesn't actually spell it out, but from the rhythm of his book, but I know the answer to the question why they all have the same spectacles. It's because they're the best ones that the VA were giving out to people who had full benefits.
I mean,
they
also
were all on VA benefits.
I mean, those are like the glasses they give out as military too. I mean, we've all seen Full Metal Jacket, Joker's wearing the same glass, like the same aviators with no, you know, shade in them.
They are cool glasses.
They are cool glasses. Yeah.
Yeah.
Classics, really. It's actually a shame what Jeffrey Dahmer and co did to them.
Yeah, I mean, they made him timeless, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So when we get back into Henry Lee Lucas, he talked about the Hand of Death cult,
right?
Yeah,
as being a member of it. I don't know how much. It's hard because, like, we all. Did you guys watch the Henry Lee Lucas Netflix documentary?
Did not.
It's decent. It's good because, like, I've said it before, I like watching all these ones, even if they're on Netflix, because you can, like, at least see, like, what the people look like.
I'm doing that with the X-Files now. I'm being like, oh, look, here's some Program to Kill stuff in the X-Files.
Oh, yeah.
Every episode, practically.
Yeah. Oh, there's Fox Mulder. He's a sex addict.
yeah.
But
they did an episode about the Phoenix program, dude.
Yeah.
Pretty good episode too, by the way.
how much credence do you guys give the idea that Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole, gay lovers, imagine walking in on that.
Not there's anything wrong with that.
How much credence do you give to those guys being born into some South Texas death cult that crosses over into Mexico?
I would say that it's plausible.
Yeah.
Is it definitely true? We can't know, obviously. But I do know that he's a bit of a liar. He's a bit of a fibber. He likes to tell, stories. Yeah.
I don't want to be in a sex cult.
Yeah.
He's a cat. He's a Satanist, Jerry. I would say that, but I will also say this is he talked to, this is going way back on the show, by the way, William, but remember our episode on the femicides in Juarez?
Yeah, with the great Dalton Pruitt.
It slots right in with Program to Kill, doesn't it?
It's in Program to Kill.
Yeah, he talks about it.
Yeah. But we never knew about Program to Kill at the time. We were just like, oh, this is definitely a CIA or, you know, like an intelligence connected Epstein. I think we used the word it's Epstein stuff.
Yeah. did you guys have the info on the guy that Dave talks about in his book? Like that. It's like an India, like a dot India guy.
Yeah.
Who killed a bunch of those women. He talks about it in Program to Kill. Like it's somehow.
No, I remember it in the book. Yeah. But I didn't know about it when we were researching just the femicides. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to dispute. It's pretty hard to dispute, but it's just like so crazy that, like we said, like every week you research a new thing and you're like, oh, well, obviously I'm starting to see things.
After a while, they all start joining up and you realize it's all one big thing.
Yeah. And he knew, I don't know if it was actually the Matamoros death cult, but he knew about some ones that were super similar to that and like knew exactly where they were and where to find bodies and stuff in Mexico.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He also knew like some things that weren't really public knowledge about about Jonestown too.
Yeah.
Henry did?
Yeah.
Henry did. Yeah. Henry knew something about, he said something about like, oh, they actually shot them all or something. And the news was just saying they all drank Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You know, at the time.
But according to Henry Lee Lucas, not many of them did. And, yeah. And McGowan credits it, doesn't he? He says, yeah, it's most likely Henry Lee Lucas was there and he killed them.
Or he says, I think Henry Lee Lucas himself said he didn't, but he was there and he dropped off the poison or something. Is that part of the,
you know,
that's right, yeah. Lore? But McGowan
sounds like a Henry Lee Lucas invention, though, to be honest.
McGowan definitely said that people all had gunshot wounds. Most of the people had gunshot wounds.
It's documented where that Kool-Aid came from. That Kool-Aid was shipped to them by, have you ever heard of the Synanon cult?
Yeah.
Synanon. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know how it's pronounced, but yeah, that's Synanon. How I thought
it was like a recovery cult
in San Francisco, right?
It started in LA, but they had, I think, a place up in Ukiah, Deborah, where
that's also MK Ultra.
Yeah.
Is it connected
Ukiah is that's where Jonestown was in Redwood Valley. So they knew the Synanon people, and the Synanon people sent them. It wasn't even Kool-Aid. It was like the generic flavor aid they sent to them. And Ukiah Valley's there's all sorts of crazy stuff up there. Yeah.
Is that the same place that John Lilly's from too, or was rather, did his research?
Deborah lives right by there.
You know why they had to machine gun all those Jonestown people?
Because
they wouldn't drink the Kool-Aid because it wasn't grape flavor.
Yeah, they didn't put a bunch of cups of sugar in it too, in addition to the Kool-Aid.
There's a bunch of PatCon stuff that went on up there too. This guy Bob Matthews, who was in all that crazy like Northern Idaho
Leonard
stuff.
Leonard Lake and Charles Eng is also definitely PatCon stuff.
Yeah. This guy Bob Matthews, the Silent Brotherhood was like his like white power Aryan Nation thing. They robbed a Brinks truck for like $3 million in like 1984.
Oh, yes. Is these the guys? There. And then after that, they ran and hid at Elohim City, right?
They were all, they were all over the place.
I know that story. Yes. That's crazy. That connects to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can get a hold of this book, The Silent Brotherhood, it's a good read. It's not a conspiracy book, but it's a good read. It's got a blurb on the cover from Morris Dees.
Interesting. SPLC. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So Leonard Lake and Charles Eng is definitely PatCon stuff. They were like, I don't know how successful they fucking were, but they seem to be trying to get together a weird right-wing conspiracy. A right-wing sort of end times cult. That in which, you know, I think he was in the Phoenix program, if I'm not mistaken, Leonard Lake, and or he was at least in Vietnam. But it's whenever they come back and do serial killer shit, I always just assume they were in the Phoenix program.
And the other guy was from like Hong Kong, but had like all this American citizenship stuff that he shouldn't have had.
His dad's a billionaire from Hong Kong or something.
They were and Leonard Lake came out of the Renfair scene.
Yeah. And he was in, it was called the Association for Creative Anachronisms, ACA. And it started out, like you said, as like a medieval themed, like cosplay type group. And then they were like, what if we did like ancient, like grimoire stuff?
Yeah. And then what?
And he was MK Ultra and had done, I'm assuming done, bad stuff in Vietnam. So he came back and then got into that. That's an expensive hobby. And supposedly, according to investigators, according to people who are questioned in the course of the investigation, they made a living by selling drugs and making snuff films.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that ended when, I guess they just got sloppy or whatever. And then also
they got busted shoplifting at a hardware store in South San Francisco. That's what ended it all. And they had a stolen
Renfair group.
Leonard Lake and Charles Ng. Remember, Deborah, they're the two guys and they had like this like kill kill cabin up in Calaveras County.
Yeah. So, I remember them. I didn't know about the
Renfair. They were came out of the Renfair scene. And remember that there's that sci-fi book that was like that feminist sci-fi book that the lady from Berkeley wrote in the 70s. I showed it to you before and you knew who it was, but it was like this guy.
The Collector.
No, not that one. There's like this. The people they were hanging out with were these like creepy Renfair, like sci-fi hippies in Berkeley. And they were all like kid touchers too, though. It ended up being.
Sci-fi authors and kid touching. A tradition that it can.
Renfair sci-fi.
Yeah. Certain, maybe I won't invoke that whole thing, but there's a famous, well-known science fiction author that is associates with known pedophiles. We'll just say
L. Ron Hubbard.
Him too. That's true. Associating with Anton LaVey, speaking of which, of A Program to Kill. And also Scientology itself is an intelligence, compromise, organization essentially. I actually kind of agree with some of the points made in Dianetics, but
I've never even looked into it.
Basically it's just like psychiatry is bullshit and you shouldn't mess with your brain, and you can deal with all of your with your traumatic problems by like having healthy relationships.
Yeah,
got it.
Which is just true, by the way.
Friend of the show, Dalton Pruitt, I heard him not long ago say on his podcast, he was talking about Scientology because he's big into being a grifter, isn't he? And they were talking about improv classes, and he came up with the line, "Well, you're better off joining Scientology because at least that way you get a career in show business."
After you get raped, yeah. That's a good bit, honestly. But yeah, and then also the connection there between L. Ron Hubbard, he was having weird gay orgies, or weird bi orgies, I suppose, with the guy from, I forget his name, but he was the Temple of Set founder.
Michael Aquino.
Oh, yeah, he was in there too. So he was the love child, air quotes, of the guy, the first guy I'm talking about, who was the, he was involved in the space program, the Jet Propulsion Lab guy.
Jack Parsons.
Jack Parsons, yes. Jack Parsons and supposedly I believe Blap said this on our show, but supposedly Michael Aquino is like the cosmic love child of Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, he's supposed to be like a homunculus or something, right?
Something like, I'm sure it was just some weird sex magic thing where like, they were like, they like, you know, did like the Andre's Steakhouse hand gesture towards each other at the same time while like a couple had sex under them.
You're talking about the Eiffel Tower.
That couple was Richard Pryor and Marlon Brando.
And then
did you know that story, Deborah?
Richard Pryor
and Marlon Brando had sex?
Yeah.
No.
Missionary style.
That's our assumption.
The missionary style is your assumption, but the fact that they did it is 100% true.
Yes. Now you know.
I'm learning so much.
What do you think he was talking about in Apocalypse Now? The horror.
Yeah.
It's what you experience when you picture that. Where were we with that? Oh yeah, Michael Aquino is the child. I'm assuming, like I said, it was just some kind of, they did like a Eiffel Tower thing over a couple conceiving a baby, and then that was Michael Aquino. That's my assumption is what it really was.
His mother owns a bunch of property up in Marin County where Deborah lives.
Michael Aquino's mom?
Is she alive?
Yeah. I don't think so. Okay. But I think it had transferred to him, so he lived up there and stuff.
What else should we get to? Oh yeah, Charles Ng. I wanted to talk about the black guy was interesting. The black guy was I forget his name now, but in Atlanta.
Wayne Williams.
Yes, yes.
That guy was it's crazy. He wrote like an autobiography talking about how he was at like some like CIA.
See, I was just gonna bring camp. That up. Yeah. And then they confronted him about it on TV and he's like, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, Programmed to Chill did a pretty good couple part episodes about him recently.
Yeah. I haven't heard it. But I will say this. The other thing is like, so Dave McGowan is dead, but I got a shout out to this guy on YouTube. His YouTube channel is LOL Field and Love. LOLFIELDANDLOVE. And it's seemingly just a guy who has never shown his face once, who puts together these really well-researched videos and compilations of clips of media that is based around Programmed to Kill, seemingly right after Dave McGowan died. Right. And to the point where it's like Tupac's releasing more albums.
Right.
Basically. And it's brilliant. Every time there's a new serial killer thing comes out, I always go to the channel and boom, there's some shit about it. Him going, this is interesting. Like for that, remember that Long Island thing?
Yeah.
He posted about an hour and a half of Curtis Sliwa's radio show. And Curtis is just full on Programmed to Killing on live FM, live AM radio, basically, and going, this is, you know, everyone who's from Long Island knows that this is not this one guy. It's a syndicate of guys who collect hookers, kill them on video, and sometimes they release them. And it's a thing that's been ongoing for 30 years this is just the newest iteration of who they're trying to pin it on. This is like carelessly with the beret just on the radio saying this. And it's like, wow. I mean, and I wouldn't have known about it if not for this guy on YouTube. So shouts out to him.
Yeah, because there's Roy Radin, and he was from the Son of Sam case. He was a really rich
Cotton Club guy, right?
Yeah. And he was doing that up there.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so that's intersecting with Son of Sam, that whole thing. There's so many. Boston Strangler was obviously just a rapist who went down for all these murders because they caught him as a rapist. And he was being passed. I'm assuming he was given money or something in jail to say that he had done it in order to tie up all these loose ends, because he had a modus operandi that was consistent. And by taking on all these other murders and the Boston Strangler case, he was blowing his own modus operandi out of the water. It made no sense that he had done both things.
Oh, yeah. Another major theme of McGowan's book here is that this FBI profiling thing doesn't work on, the supposed FBI profiling science doesn't actually apply if you analyze any serial killer. It's just there for them to, I don't know,
mythologize it,
yeah, and sort of make themselves look good and say, oh well, yeah, this guy fits the profile, so
he must. Yeah, right. Well, it's another way to get political dissidents in jail too, by the way. Yeah,
it is.
And all that Mindhunter stuff wasn't real.
No, yeah, bullshit. I haven't seen that movie, that show, but what's it called? In the book, in Programmed to Kill, Dave quotes the guy who, I forget what his name was, I apologize, but the guy who is like the head and founder of the behavioral science unit within the FBI, coincidentally was a boyhood friend of the clown one. John Wayne Gacy. And he brazenly says, you know, there was a lot of like different schools of thought in psychology in the 60s before we came. Basically, we went to the psychiatric or psychological industry at large and said, this is your new framework for how like essentially all of your industry is going to work. And I'm proud. And this is a quote, or I'm butchering it, of course. It's not a verbatim quote, but and I'm proud to report we basically were able to reorient the entire mental health industry in America and and also the world, to accommodate for our behavioral science, you know, science, air quotes.
Because, like you say, they've got all this media. It's spread through the world via Operation Mockingbird type stuff. It's the media. The United States is the media hegemon of the world, isn't it? Over the West, anyway.
Right, so, well...
It's all these TV shows and movies and stuff that make everybody believe that.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, Hollywood is in America, right.
Yeah.
Everybody consumes that slot. And yeah, again, also like X-Files, I mean, literally I was just watching, like I said, I've been watching through it, and there's been two episodes in a row that are basically like the moral of the episode is like to reinforce that the psychological profile is a valid thing. That's like the purpose of the episode is for them to be like, my profile says this. And, you know, and then the local cop doesn't believe it because he knows what he's doing with traditional, you know.
Is Scully like a profiler as well?
No, he's the profile. She's the scientist. Oh, she does Mulder, like the medical Mulder's science.
The profiler. Yeah.
He's a psychologist. Yes, of course.
Got it.
The perfect cop, a psychologist.
Yeah.
Really,
Deborah, though, did you have something you wanted to say?
No, I was just thinking about back to Henry Lee Lucas when you were saying that they, you know, marched all these other, like DeSalvo, you know. He took responsibility for the murders when he was only responsible for the rapes. And Henry Lee Lucas, they used him and paraded him all over, and he took credit for all these unsolved murders.
Yeah. A lot of drug ones, by the way. Drug related, especially in Texas. That's one of the places. I believe Dave makes this point. I think so. But California, Texas, and Florida are like, you'll notice, are the hotbeds of all this activity because that's where drugs come in.
Yep.
Yeah. He does make that point explicitly.
It is him. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was him or somebody else that I had read.
Yeah.
But, I know it does.
I always keep, you know, this was years ago, way before I started podcasting. I heard some guy on a podcast, and it wasn't a conspiracy type podcast or anything, but there was just these two guys talking to each other. What is it? Your uncle's in the CIA or something? And they, well, he, oh yeah, yeah, he was. Or, was anything cool come out of that? No, he just told me not to watch television. And I can't remember who it was or what show it was, but that stuck with me. I have stopped watching television, not just because of that, but it kind of reinforced my decision to stop watching television.
I've always been, one thing I kind of wanted to bring up was, like, I know you said you hadn't seen a bunch of the Netflix shows, but it seems like somebody at Netflix has programmed to kill, because like there's been so many series that have come out about every story in there.
Well, they're playing cover for Program to Kill is what they're doing.
Yeah.
Well, look,
and like the Henry Lee Lucas one, Netflix comes to the conclusion that he's responsible for like two murders or something, like his mom and his girlfriend, and Dave's like at like 500. So it's got to be somewhere in the middle there, you know?
Right.
Well, I now don't. I started off not watching television, but now I don't watch any video content at all. And I'd already stopped watching any video content before I read Program to Kill. But early on in Program to Kill, McGowan explains to you, he's trying to lay the foundations of the book, which is to prove the existence of like dissociative states.
Yeah, we're all mind controlled.
Hypnotic states. Yeah, this is, well, it happens when you're watching TV. Time melts away. So, like, it's amazing how, for me anyway, with stopping habitually watching video content, I'd then say, I've got a bit of time, I'll watch a movie or something. But that, if you don't habitually watch TV, eventually you just go off watching, you don't want to get put into that state. I don't want to be in a dissociative state.
Elaine, I'm dissociating.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I definitely recommend giving that a try.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this. I work a repetitive skilled labor job, and I have to dissociate to get through it.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I'm a truck driver, and you dissociate when you're doing
that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's one of them, too, yeah.
But at least I'm just seeing, I'm just looking at the hypnotic white lines going like that.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I'm not watching some. You're learning, too, usually. To teach me into being, yeah, also, yeah.
Well, yeah, you're crafting thing. a new MK Ultra pattern in your brain, yeah, your own design.
It's sort of like being as if I was tied into one of those prison chairs with
Clockwork Orange.
Oh, like, yes, exactly.
Hypnotic goggles just flashing patterns on my eyes while I've got headphones on. I've rebrainwashed myself is what's happened. Yeah. But I mean, you can do it on your own terms.
Yeah. Yes, you should. Yes. You need to take control of your own brainwashing. Yes.
Yeah. I shared my review of the Duolingo app with you, didn't I, Scott? Do you remember that? Because I was so impressed with it.
I forget. Maybe you did.
I did. Yeah. It was basically you can now, Duolingo uses all the evil mind control techniques of the government, but you get to choose what it's being used for this time. Five stars.
So true. I literally said the same thought. I said, this has got to be some kind of DARPA program.
What is it?
That they've released to the public. The private Duolingo is the program we're talking about. It's an app on Android.
You can learn languages on it.
Yeah, teaches you how to speak new languages. William's learning how to speak Russian, and I'm learning how to speak Japanese.
Yeah,
is it working?
I'm learning how to read Japanese. Duh. I can tell you that much.
That's cool. Maybe I'll learn Chinese, and I could go join the finders in Virginia or something.
Yeah, that might help for you. Yeah.
I could traffic to a wealthy Chinese businessman.
I know some other right-wing wing nuts who are trying to learn Russian, and they're like starting off learning the alphabet and then reading books about grammar and stuff like that. Duolingo doesn't do that. I can read anything in Russian phonetically now. I know the alphabet, and I've never learned it because it teaches you. It basically teaches
so wait, this is not a sponsor, by the way.
Yeah, but it's to do with psychological control and how they know how your brain works. It's basically you find yourself learning it the way an infant learns his first language. It's pretty scary, to be honest. It's wild.
Yeah, I can now literally look at Japanese writing. I mean, I'm well known for saying that I like to watch videos of travel in Japan and like how to take different trains in Japan. Every
squid, sign. Are you watching squid porn?
No, I'm not into that. I don't watch any porn. But what's it called? But I'm really into, I want to travel to Japan. That's why I'm learning how to speak Japanese. But I'd like to travel in Japan, and you know, it's like kind of daunting. It's like it's not like in Europe, everyone speaks English in Europe. So if you go to Japan, you're SOL basically. So I found this really helpful. I can look at any sign and be like, sound out each character, which it's not letters, it's syllables. But I can figure out any word that way, basically.
It's the reverse.
And I've only been doing it for like 60 something days.
Yeah. Cool.
Impressive.
I'll check it out.
I hate to do this, but I have to bow out. I'm playing footsies with my dog down here, and he's about to attack me. So I have
you better go before he takes a dump on the couch.
Another commitment. So
yeah.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice
both.
To meet you.
I'm sorry I can't stay nice for the rest because this is really interesting stuff.
Okay, thanks, Deborah. You can listen back.
I will.
Okay, Deborah. Bye.
Bye.
So Program to Kill.
Well, yeah. All right, now that she's out of here, let's really start letting them fly.
Yeah.
Well, we can. I don't want to keep
this. Does
you guys
this go
too
on
long.
YouTube?
No, my YouTube got nuked like 2 years ago. So
okay.
Based.
We can. Yeah. I felt like I finally made it. You know, I get like 600 downloads.
We're pussies. We hid all of our shit so we could keep our YouTube channel.
Yeah. We've still.
You know, I wasn't getting any views on YouTube, so I just stopped uploading stuff to it.
Same.
And then I went to like log in just to like look stuff up on my own one day, and it was gone. They'd got me from stuff in the past. Dude, my sister works for YouTube in the department that like nukes people, and she couldn't even get me back.
Wow, that is
so. I think it's all COVID stuff that's true now, but
that was what we were getting in trouble with too. But anyway, so well, I guess let's hit some more
Anne Frank episode.
Yeah, that is what finally
I was,
did
which
it.
One's your Anne Frank episode? I was looking for it. I couldn't find it.
It's called like the German occupation of the Netherlands or something.
Okay.
It's like episode 40 something, I believe.
Okay. I'll check it out.
But yes, let's hit a couple more of the big serial killers that I wanted to get to. Oh, this is the other thing. So I remember about 7-8 years ago, maybe even up to 10 years ago, it was at the beginning of this trend of these true crime, you know, body language and analysis videos. And my friend was like, hey, check this video out. And he sent me this former, well, he was a current, this colonel in the Canadian Air Force. I don't remember his name now, sorry. But it was one of these like interrogate, like the Grant D'Amato video, William, like where it's an interrogation room of him, or it's his interrogation by the police. And he ended up getting busted for kidnapping and murdering two women and videotaping the torture and murder. And also he broke into 82 different people's houses to steal like sexual trinkets from them. Right. And I mean, also like
it'd be SOL in my house.
but he stole a bunch of girls' like underwear and shit. And then he posted a bunch of, or didn't post. He took a bunch of pictures of him wearing them too. And the video showed this is very funny.
This is literally me.
But and I remember at the time, like the point of the video was like, can you believe this criminal is talking this dismissively to the cops when he's guilty? And I remember thinking at the time, like, man, what an asshole for thinking he can get away with this.
Yeah.
Then I read Program to Kill.
Yeah.
And then I saw the video of that channel that I was telling you before. He did a video on this guy. And so isn't it odd, first of all, that he was doing murders and videotaping? I just got to ask you the question point blank. Do you really think that a murderer is going to videotape his? Why do you think so many of these murderers are videotaping their crimes? Do you really think they're going to watch it back over and over and over again for themselves?
Well, maybe, but they're also going to sell it.
Yes. Okay. That's what I'm getting at. Yes.
Yeah.
And then so it also, it's a funny thing connection. So this guy went down hard for this. And by the way, they never investigated his wife and like friends and stuff. No. Even though it's obvious that somebody had to know what was going on. Yeah. And also, this is the craziest thing. His job in the military, in the Canadian Air Force was the VIP pilot, and he flew around the Queen. He flew around like every prime minister of Canada, all of these defense, you know, ministers and shit, foreign ministers from England, all these people. And what is he doing in his spare time? He's raping chicks to death on video.
Yeah.
And then best of all, he was college roommates with another serial killer from Canada who also made videos of his murder rapes.
Dude. I mean, it seems like it's every case, isn't it?
It really, every time I see serial killer now, I'm like, well, this is definitely another one. I have one in my phone. Something just came out. A Hispanic kid was involved in the Order of Nine Angles, which is definitively something that was funded and created by the United States Justice Department. The guy who started this thing, his name is Joseph. Oh no.
The old Nazi guy that they all worship.
The old Nazi guy.
That's weird, because that guy's not like a worshipable kind of guy. He seems
right.
Like,
well, the reason why maybe people were doing it is because he was using the money that he was getting a fucking pay stub from the Justice Department He was, you know, figuring out a way to get people to worship him using his cash. I don't know. Maybe he was getting fun party favors and stuff.
Yeah, because he was, because it was the Adam Waffen guys that were all into that dude, but they were all like the 09A crossover, I guess.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. That Adam Waffen, dude, that Adam Waffen video that they made, none of the guys that went down for Adam Waffen were in it. It was made by people that were hired by the fucking FBI.
Yeah.
That video of them all, like, you know, doing like basically a black metal photo shoot essentially in the woods wearing their, like, you know,
they're wearing like skull balaclavas and stuff like that.
Yeah. And like carrying AR-15s and shit.
Yeah. They're up in Washington, up north of me.
Yeah. Those guys were actors that were hired by the government.
Yeah. Because I remember seeing the video of those dudes getting arrested at like Taco Bell in Florida or something. They looked, they weren't
nothing
like black, they weren't like black metal. They were on like Metallica shirts.
Yeah. And they also are, I think they're markedly more schlubby than the ones in the video.
Too. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I've just had a thought pertaining to the Franklin scandal book.
Right here.
Which has been simmering away for a while. You know, these guys like Matt Taibbi and whatnot, who are sending in loads of FOIA requests to the government to get information about that. They're having to think up what documents to ask for to expose this, how the government's been controlling censorship in the digital space. Yeah.
Right.
I would like one of those guys to send a FOIA request asking for any communications with Wikipedia about what's his name from the
Larry E. King.
Larry King, yeah.
Black Larry.
Yeah. Because he does not have a Wikipedia page.
Well, which is, William.
Yeah.
Matt Taibbi, maybe the reason why Matt Taibbi does not do that is because Matt Taibbi has written in his memoirs that he serially raped 16-year-olds while he was working for an English language newspaper in Russia. And I assume, by the way, if you're working for an English language newspaper in Russia, you're a CIA.
You're a spy.
Asset.
Yeah. Yes. He's that's written in his diary. He's like, dear
Just
diary.
Do a quick Google for everyone listening right now. Google, quick Google search Jim Goad, Matt Taibbi. Jim Goad wrote an excellent article about it in Tacky's Mag saying the truth about Matt Taibbi. I think it was possibly the title of it. But either way, he read this fucking asshole's memoirs and pulled out because they were having an online feud. This is what Jim Goad does. He's fucking psycho. And he read his book to find incriminating shit about him.
Has he ever explained it away?
I think he just said Jim Goad's a liar. No, actually he did. And Jim covers this in the article. He says, that's satire. I was writing a fake memoir. It's enhanced for entertainment purposes. I would never do that. But it still doesn't explain the fact why he's writing an English language newspaper in Russia and he's not a spy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a spy. Definitely. It's like anyone who has spent time in Africa, spy.
Yeah. Also, by the way, in Hungary, what's it called? The guy, Matt, what is his name? I want to say Matt Welch. The guy from Reason Magazine, he wrote an English language newspaper in Budapest. So I think we know what he is.
But yeah, I mean, I just pulled that name off the top of my head. But you know what I mean? There's people who do that all the time. Isn't there?
Well, that explains why he wouldn't make the FOIA request about Larry
King.
Also
why he's the one that's got that job.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. He's allowed to do it. Just like the reason why that Mormon podcast that is exposing the Mormons for being hypocrites is also just happens to believe in all the current liberal shibboleths.
Yeah. Because they're spies, too.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, Mormons aren't like born spies. They're like Freemasonry for like.
Yeah, is it most the FBI Mormon?
I didn't know that. I'm actually somewhat surprised to find that out.
Yeah,
I thought
that
was all
that
gay
much
guys
about
now.
It, but I've heard about it. That's like the whole Thomas Pynchon Inherent Vice kind
of. I haven't read any of that guy's books.
It's tough to get through, but yeah, it's like it's It's covered in there. And yeah. And then the CIA.
I didn't know that. I know they are all now homos. And also,
because look, check it out. They go on, and it would work out as well for CIA because they go on a mission. They speak a foreign language. They know how to get around in a different country, stuff like that. You know,
yeah, it's like being gay.
Yeah.
Well, being gay is inherently deceptive. You're literally going around pretending you're normal, but then doing secret gay shit in behind closed doors, and sometimes not.
And you guys would know because you covered some serious gay LGBTQIA plus icons, Albert Fish and Carl Panzram.
Yeah. Good point. Yes. Yeah. Gay icon. That's right. You remembered that we called them gay icons. That's, that rules. we did, of course. Where would the gay identity movement be today without Albert Fish and Carl
I don't know if you remember, but do you remember? Because like on Netflix and Amazon, they always have like the black voices, Black voices month. They had Dahmer in the gay pride section.
Yeah. Well, I will say this: I didn't watch that documentary or that that biopic, whatever the fuck you want to call it. I noticed that it was sort of aesthetically sort of aimed at a gay audience. Like it had like that Faye looking like actor playing Jeffrey Dahmer, like more handsome than the real Jeffrey Dahmer.
That guy plays like a gay dude like 75% of the time in American Horror Story, you know.
There you go. Yeah, so I'm saying it's obviously aimed at that kind of audience. So I didn't see why people were butthurt about that being, it's like obviously coded as a gay show. Like,
yeah. And then they tried to say it really upset me when they tried to say that Jeffrey Dahmer was a racist because he raped and killed black men. It's like, well, he's having sex with them. Doesn't that make him racist?
I will say, to defend them a mite, they did, I'm sorry, Jeffrey Dahmer did go out of his way to say, hey, I didn't kill them because they were black. I killed them because I lived in the same neighborhood.
Yeah, so he lived in bad neighborhoods.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it was on his mind, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've listened to enough of our episodes to get my patented Jeffrey Dahmer take.
Early one, by the way.
Yeah. I have not heard it.
So, yeah, well, you can find it in the wiki. I aver that Jeffrey Dahmer wasn't gay. And here's my evidence for this. Jeffrey Dahmer drilled a hole in a young Asian guy's head.
Yeah, Laotian.
Yeah, and poured Drano into it, right? So he's a small, petite guy with no body hair, right? And he pours the drain cleaner or whatever it is into his brain. Hey presto, it's the nearest thing to a woman. He's just what he is. He's a straight guy who's got no game, so he can pick up guys
and turn them into women
and turn them into women by melting half of their brain.
You know, he also raped that guy's other brother.
I did know that. Yes.
Yeah,
what's wrong with that family?
Yeah, like you got to watch your kids a little better after the first.
Well, I got to imagine
that happens a lot, though, doesn't it? There's a few cases.
I was just going to bring that up.
Program to kill, yeah.
There's got to be something more to that. I got to imagine it wasn't just like, you know, he was at a candy van and pulled up and said, "Hey, kids, you want to come in?"
Well, I guess the kids with shitty parents, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good thing to target if you're
that probably happens at Catholic school all the time. It's like kids with, you know, I went to Catholic school where that was going on. I went to two Catholic schools. That shit was going on at both of them. No, they didn't get me because my parents aren't divorced.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that is kind of...
No, I was a little guy. You know, I was a cute kid. They could have got me. Yeah. They didn't.
So it wasn't because of your looks.
No, but you kind of nailed it, though. I mean, that is if you're vulnerable is what gets you to be a victim. It's not that you have any sort of immutable characteristics.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what vulnerable people are vulnerable to, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's true. One of the things. Yeah. Let's see, before we get out of here, I know we're probably coming up on, I don't know how long you guys usually do, but what's it called? I want to get a couple more. The black guy. Oh yeah. He said he did at the CIA camp. And then, you know, my favorite thing was that his dad helped him dispose of the videotapes by burning them.
Yeah.
And
they were like burning pictures in their barbecue in the Weber.
Could you imagine
being
a fly on the wall to that, where the guy's like, shit, I told you to not be messing around with no kids no more.
Yeah.
Wayne.
Yeah.
I didn't raise you to do this kind of shit.
Yeah.
You know, that was going up, because I mean, Atlanta black family, you know, black guy in his 20s and his dad is around.
Yeah. Like from everything I've heard, he had like great parents who like get paid like a ton of money for him to go learn how to do like radio. He wanted to be like a radio guy. So they gave him like all this radio equipment and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then
instead he decided to take photos of kids being raped satanically.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy, he for sure wasn't the only
DeRusty Nelson. DeRusty Nelson.
He's got hearing Nick Bryant talk about that guy, he has some real disdain for him, which is, you know.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, you get that story, and then the document of the police report is literally in the book in the very end. But there's that subpoena or deposition, I suppose, by the or maybe it isn't even. I don't know if it's court, it's deposition. So whatever. But the point is this woman reported that her daughter, she took her daughter to a like photography session with Rusty Nelson, and she was like 17. And he was like trying to get her to get naked and stuff. And it's like, again, I understand that by revealing the stuff to Nick, like that was, you know, it helped shed light on the whole thing. But it's like, when you lay down when you get down with dogs, you come up with fleas, is all I'm going to say. You just don't want to deal with people fucking like that. That's disgusting.
Yeah.
And then to compare that too to like some of the other like nice people who came out of that, like Alicia
Owen.
Yeah. And like, I guess Paul Bonacci too. I mean, it seems like he's pretty well adjusted. And you know,
after going to prison for pedophilia, you know,
right. I know. Well, I mean, I guess the system sometimes does work.
Yeah. Dude, I know somebody that was like messaging back and forth with them on Facebook.
Really? When?
Like 3 years ago.
And what did he have to say? Anything interesting?
He was trying to get him to come on his podcast. I don't think it ever worked out. But
I think it might have worked,
but I don't think my friend's co-hosts wanted to have him on.
What?
Yeah.
Absurd. I was like,
dude, fire them. I'll come do it with you.
Yeah. That's wild. But yeah, Paul Bonacci, for those not initiated, you know, sort of knew all of the inside details of the Johnny Gosch case and of the Franklin Credit Union Larry King allegations, which seemingly are true.
Yeah. The Colorado basement.
Yep. That too. Yeah. 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 That being the Johnny Gosch thing. But of course, he also knew corroborating information related to Alan Bear and the Twin Towers, interesting name by the way, parties where they had you know, underage sex parties and stuff with
Peter Citrone, local columnist, and then Craig Spence, who's like a high-end lobbyist in Washington D.C.
and killed himself in the W Hotel in Boston, and I'm thinking about renting that room. but also specifically what was I gonna say? You mentioned before Troy Boner. I was like, I gotta imagine that Larry
that guy,
King,
not well adjusted. That guy
no
he's sad life
now.
Man.
But I really liked his quote. Maybe I'll even pull it up. It's in his lie or die subpoena or a deposition rather. But regardless, I think that kid was like specifically like chosen because are you really gonna like when you read Troy Boner in those like Omaha Sun Herald newspapers, you're just gonna be like, whatever this guy is saying, of course he lied. His name's Troy Boner.
Yeah.
Like that, Larry King must have been like, oh, sweet. That's like, nobody, this is the perfect kid to fucking rape, first of all. Yeah. And second of all, to do all these horrible things, move drugs and, you know, deliver child for sex and murder and all this stuff. I mean, but Troy Boner had the quote of the whole book, or one of them anyway, one of my favorites anyway, but he said something like, these people I'm going to butcher it, but the quote is something to the effect of like, they'll say that everything we say is not worth considering because we're drug addicts and sexual perverts and we're not well adjusted and all this stuff, but they made us drug addicted to drugs and they made us sexual perverts. And yeah. Alan Bear specifically shot heroin into my arm. And that's what started me to becoming a drug addict. And that's really powerful. I mean, like this guy was like a dupe, victim, and someone who, you know, again, just he ended up playing right into the hand of law enforcement to cover the whole thing up too. And so it's on some level, you kind of like, on two levels, you can pity him and despise him, because if he had maybe had a little bit more courage, perhaps, I don't know. I don't know. Who am I kidding?
Yeah. But you got this is another little afterthought of this. You got a targeted ad on your Instagram, didn't you, for Boys Town?
I did get a targeted ad for Boys Town after reading the book. And I didn't look at anything. Again, I physically have the fucking book. It's not like I was reading the PDF on my phone and the phones registered the fact that it said Boys Town on the screen. No. Yeah. Also, I also was interested after reading the
What were they trying to sell you from Boys Town?
To
children?
Get donations. Money. Yeah. They're begging for money. Yeah. Another thing was after I read the book, I went and searched Mickey Mott, FBI agent Mickey Mott. And he was the real heavy in the FBI who really bullied Alicia into, you know, and also Troy Boner as well into recanting. He had the affair with Alicia Owens' lawyer, Pamela Vuteditch, and he died just less than a year ago. And that was the first thing that popped up when I Googled Mickey Mott FBI. And it was like one of those, like, guest books for like their obituary or whatever. And there was a bunch of people being like, Mick, like, I'm, you know, and it said like, it's all the shit about Michael Mickey Mott was a 48 year veteran of the FBI and a American hero. And, you know, he spent 30 long years married to his forever person and shit like that. And I'm like, bro, like, I just, it makes me so spiritually upset to see this, And then you see the comments like me and Mick served in the FBI together. He was a great man and all this shit like that. I'm just like, wow. Like, you people are just evil. You're so evil.
They're called the filth for a reason.
Yeah. So I guess that's kind of where I would like to sum up my thoughts on these topics for now. I've obviously got thousands of things to say about them, but.
Yeah, you know. We could keep going and going and going. But thank you guys for being here. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, if you guys ever want to do anything on your end, we could do like Ripper Crew or something like that.
Let's do something like that. That'd be fun.
I got this book, it's pretty thin. This one's hard to find.
I was just looking at this cover today because I was watching some videos and they covered very, very briefly.
Yeah, I got this thing for like $7, but it's like over $100 whenever you look for it. I do the Jay Dyer thing where I put everything in my cart and then I get emails when it like goes down, when like one pops up for $5, even though it's like a $200 book.
Right.
So, nice. But yeah, thanks guys for coming. Plug everything.
Oh, right. Okay. So, I just want to say, go find our videos on Rockfin. That's www.rokfin.com/historyhomos. You can watch all of our video content there. And we're also available, you know, all the off brand YouTube places that aren't YouTube. Also follow us across social media at History Homos Pod. And
and you can get the with audio.
You can download it wherever you find you find podcasts or at www.historyhomos.com.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Those are the three important things.
That's it. William, thank you so much for staying up. I know it's late there, man. Really appreciate it. And Scott, yeah, thank you guys for being here. Appreciate everything. Again. And let's talk soon.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Peace.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order, idiots, playing God all day, deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that seven-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you is a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.